So welcome everyone to the Punekar show. Today we have Padma Shri awardee Dr. Raman Gangakhedkar with us. Raman Gangakhedkar, as you know, is at the forefront of India's battle with COVID. He is an Indian epidemiologist, worked as a head scientist of epidemiology and communicable diseases at ICMR, that's Indian Council of Medical Research. Recently he retired in June. And, you know, he's also had his master's at the Johns Hopkins University. So, Raman sir, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me for this show.
So, our show is about the Punekars, and we would like to, learn more about you. So, as to how did you get into the research profession and how is the post-life, retirement life treating you?
I got into this profession it was a conscious decision. When I passed out, my professor said, perhaps you are fitter to be into research. Whatever I have observed, you are more tuned to going for in-depth kind of observations. So then I asked him what exactly would he like to do. At that time, Dr. Inge, who was my professor, he said, why don't you go and join National Institute of Nutrition? That's how I started off into research. Though research was never a lucrative career, even at that time it was still worse. But it was something which I thought I would prefer to do in view of the fact that I never wanted to do the routine management of patients with cough and colds or diarrhea and things like that. Now that I had a long stint into research and especially public health per se, now I retired on 30th of June. Though I would indeed say that I haven't retired the way the word tends to connote, mainly because I continue to be Dr. C.G. Pandit, National Chair with ICMR.
Oh, wonderful.
And my days are full with respect to video conferences that I have to attend, not only for COVID-19, but other communicable diseases such as TB, HIV, hepatitis. We have three big national programs for the same. So it continues to be a challenging kind of environment, not exactly a retirement, but at the same time, I can still relax being here with my family. Earlier in Delhi, I used to stay alone, and then it was almost 18 hours work every day.
Oh.
Probably some relaxation comes, especially when you play with your own family.
Okay.
Especially my grandson. Oh,
wonderful, wonderful. I'm sure they must be enjoying your company as much.
That I don't know. I think somebody should ask them. I don't know.
So having done your master's with Johns Hopkins, it's one of the most prestigious, institutes. So how do you, resist, say, probably the temptation to not get into, something into research in the US or, any other overseas country, but return back to India? What was your main driver there?
No, this has been my temperament since beginning. In very early in my career, when I was working on HIV in Bombay, one of the things that happened was there was a global program on AIDS and people from WHO had come. They said, why don't you join us? We should make a difference across the world.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time also, I told very simply, because I was too young and perhaps brash enough, I said, if I have to make a difference, I would prefer to make difference in my own country than entire world to begin with, because my country needs some changes which I would like to strive for. So I started off there with that kind of a mentality. And then when it came to Hopkins, I could have taken my family with me to Hopkins, because I was awarded Fogarty Fellowship But I decided I would not take the family for one simple reason, that if you take the family and if they start liking US, then I would be stuck in a different country. I would find it difficult to say no. So I decided to keep them here. I was alone and I could spare all that time to take different kinds of courses that they offered, and that has helped me a lot to my mind. I think basically one has to decide what one wants to do, whether you want your satisfaction or your passion is to earn money, or your passion is to do something for people. You make your own choices, follow your passion, and work hard towards it. There is no reason why you should grumble. Nobody can have best of both the worlds. You can always choose only one. That's how I did it.
Wonderful. Beautiful. Beautiful. I think you've actually managed to strike that balance between your priorities, your passion, and continuing to do something that you are so fond of. So, very few people have that kind of clarity, and I think you've managed to do that wonderfully well. So
perhaps for that also I was lucky, mainly because, as a medical doctor, you can continue in research. Research is a little slow kind of a track, where you work for a year or two and then some finding comes, and that can soothen your mind that you did something.
Right.
But patient care is one where even if you provide care to the patients, then they would come back to you in another 3-4 days and say that I'm fine, doctor, and they would be really happy.
Mm.
But I had both the choices. I could do both at National AIDS Research Institute. You conduct research and you work even for those who are infected. And that gave more pleasure to continue on the same path, because basically you get a balance of both the professions that I could have had worked for.
Right. So I've heard your other interviews as well. And, back then, maybe in the 80s or 90s, AIDS was still something, which was considered to be extremely scary. Now, because of the awareness, we are possibly conversing with someone is positive, there's a lot less hesitation. So how do you see that change has come through, and, which all organizations, I'm sure you've worked with several of them. So which all organizations did actually make a difference to raising the awareness level, at least in a country like India, where, where we could have probably, sidelined, the HIV patients from the mainstream. I think we've come a long way now.
Yeah, we have come a long way. There is no doubt. I think most of the difference that could be made was because of community involvement.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, the model to control any disease has been in a top-down kind of an approach. Whereas for HIV, it was working through the grassroots levels. When you work with sex workers actually were the ones who changed the quickest in terms of using condoms, ensuring that their clients are also using condoms, which was not so easy. So sex worker organizations were the most important ones that changed the future of the country. Same was happening with men having sex with men related organizations. And what was most important was, in order to ensure that these population groups, which didn't have a voice, these are socially disadvantaged populations.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things which we always did was ensuring that the community is treated as equal. And that's how people living with HIV infections groups across the country came up. And we could manage to see, we could empower them sufficiently to stand on their own feet, and at the same time ensure that they are also part of the decision-making process, part of advising the government as to what sort of strategic changes that they would like to see.
Mm-hmm.
I think these differences are becoming more apparent now with respect to control. I cannot forget the role that Indian pharmaceuticals played, and especially Cipla at that point in time. Mm-hmm. When Cipla brought down through generic drug manufacturing, they brought down the prices like crazy, and that too in a very short period of time. I think one of the pioneers in this particular area was Dr. Hamid, who owned Cipla, and that's something which changed the scene across. And not only did they become the pharmacy of the world and started supplying these 70% of the medicines that are currently coming out in the world tend to come out from India. And that kind of manufacturing base has changed not only Indian life of those who are infected or those who could become vulnerable, but also the lives of the entire world. So HIV, to my mind, is a classical example of how programming should be done, and hopefully we should be able to replicate that soon with COVID-19.
Absolutely. So it's wonderful always to know about the pioneers in this field. And, the next question actually which we have is, of course, related to COVID. So, we've seen some resistance to COVID the news at least that we read tends to suggest that we may have developed some resistance but at what stage is India right now, you were to see? And then we can later on also look at Pune as a city.
India, I'm one person who doesn't believe in those numbers of those who are infected. When you have such a large population base, your number is going to be high for any disease that is transmitted through droplets. Right. Now, the question is, if it is transmitted through droplets, and given the fact that our population density is high, the other drivers of this outbreak, such as migration and immobility within different geographic areas, continues to be high. Mm-hmm. So it won't be surprising to see that the numbers could be higher. But what is most important to my mind is the numbers that tend to succumb to this particular infection. Even today, if you look at case fatality rates, that is death rates per lakh population, we are at a bottom that one cannot imagine that it could happen. To my mind, what we have achieved, especially through lockdown, we could postpone the rapid onset of the outbreak by almost about four to five months' time. Mm-hmm. The result was, we not only could we gear up to fight with this infection well, create additional capacity, train healthcare manpower, ensure that all protective equipment, diagnostic reagents, and disinfectants would never fall short in terms of volumes that are required, and also ensure that oxygen supply, which oxygen which you need in large quantity, mm-hmm. is also available everywhere. So we made a difference, and the result is very much seen that today what you have seen is, after such a long period of time, we are now slowly plateauing. Now, people tend to ask me a question, would there be a second wave that is coming? One has to understand waves as an approach needs to be thought of for a small defined geographic area. Mm-hmm. Now, in India, you will find that if you consider metropolitan city and the population that it has, perhaps this particular metropolitan city represents almost a country of the world somewhere. No, the sheer population size is too huge.
Correct.
The result is, you will find that the peaks within the city will come at different point in times. There could be a dip that you might see. There could be an increase, as you might see during festivities, in that particular area if the decline has already started. But overall Indian picture, to my mind, will remain static. It will not come down as rapidly as we think. I think we have to accept one thing, that COVID-19 is going to become an endemic illness, endemic infection, and we will have to continue to live with this new normal that is getting set up for at least a couple of years' time as of now, until the time we get vaccine or effective vaccine is provided to all the people, or perhaps an effective treatment regimen tends to come as an antiviral asset. The last issue, you talked of resistance. I thought you wanted to ask about mutations, whether the virus has changed. There are reports of change in the virus of having one mutation, which we call as D614G. However, I would not interpret it more, for the sole reason that the studies that have been done are not sufficient to give you enough of robustness to say that this mutation is associated with reduction in death rate, or it is also associated with higher transmission that could occur. The sole reason is this virus does not mutate as rapidly as influenza virus does, or as rapidly as HIV does. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the virus is unlikely to change all that rapidly to change the natural history or natural course of this particular infection. But there is a good news that we need to remember, that if a virus doesn't change as much, you will find that that's a good news for vaccine development. Vaccines will continue to work, provide protection over a period of time because the virus is not changing. Neither the drugs, if they come and whenever they come, we will need to worry whether the strain changes in strains is likely to lead to emergence of drug-resistant organisms. So there is a good news, there is a cautious optimism that we need to maintain, and at the same time, we need to follow the precautions which we call as COVID-appropriate behaviors.
Right. I think the SOPs or the standard operating procedures across businesses or hotels or even the hospitals and healthcare, they've changed drastically, and I guess that's the new normal that we all have now agreed to live in. From a Pune specific perspective, we keep reading that some of the beds have started becoming now available. Is it because of the precautions that we've been taking that the number has dropped, or is it something that the resistance of the community has gone up or something like that?
No, it has nothing to do, to my mind, with the resistance. But the so-called herd immunity, I'm not a very traditional believer in the same.
Okay.
Because I still expect that the way herd immunity is being talked of, without vaccine, perhaps its value in terms of it as a public health intervention is perhaps very, but not very high. But why, as you asked the question rightly, like, why are we seeing that hospital beds are also vacant in most of the hospitals now after a peak that we have observed in Pune?
Right.
Now, that's a very difficult phenomena to be answered, but there are two things which are possible. There are no hard evidences to this effect. The first thing that we have to remember is when the peak tends to occur, the most vulnerable groups, now they may be biologically vulnerable because of some things which they have, or they may be behaviorally vulnerable because they don't practice COVID-appropriate behaviors for whatever reasons. No? Now, these groups tend to get infected, and that's a small proportion that tends to be hit in the first wave of this particular infection. And once they get infected, once you start reading in newspapers that COVID-19 beds are not available everywhere, those who are vulnerable, they tend to isolate themselves because of the fear that tends to come in. Right. So there will be a decline, and this decline is also reflected or corroborated far more strongly in terms of bed availability, and therefore the decline is for real, and that's one thing we have to trust. Second thing which is also important for us to understand is when a lockdown occurs, you will find, if you look at COVID-19 transmission dynamics, you will understand that almost 44% of the cases that tend to occur of secondary transmission. Supposing I am infected, then I pass it off to somebody. 44% of the infections are transmitted within the family.
Wow.
And then the remaining ones are outside, in the outside close contact circle. Now, if this is so, lockdown tends to facilitate to some degree transmissions, because the person continues to stay within the household. He remains infectious 2 days before the symptoms develop. So he, you know, and 2 days after the symptom development, almost 76% of the transmissions can occur during this particular period. Unless you are using mask, unless you are following COVID appropriate behavior, you will keep on transmitting to even your own family members, just because you do not know that you are infected for these 4 days. Because in any case, even if you develop symptoms, you take 24 hours to go to a doctor. And after that, you, if you are tested, you are going to require at least 24 hours to get the test return, test results back. And that leads to higher transmission. Now that lockdown has been lifted, you will find those who are mobile, younger ones, they are moving out. And since they are moving out, perhaps the risk is not as much reflected in numbers at this point in time. However, you know, even if one needs to have a caution in mind that if you do not follow the COVID appropriate behavior, you will essentially find that you will bring this infection back into your household, spread it to the most vulnerable people. At least ensure that those who are most vulnerable groups, like those who are, whose ages are more than 60,
yeah,
those who have chronic morbidity like diabetes, hypertension, are not unnecessarily exposed to it just because you are moving out. And please avoid during these festivities, you know, having a social event. Please remember that beyond households, the super spreading events, so-called super spreading events, mm-hmm, tend to be social events that occur.
Right.
These are more likely to happen during festivities. So one needs to be extremely careful. Either you avoid hosting such a festivity, or you need to ensure that you would have enough of precautions taken. If you want to maintain a distance of 6 feet, it's almost impossible if you want to get some of your relatives at home for Diwali season, for that matter.
Right.
You know, that is something which is unlikely to happen in urban areas. So stay safe by avoiding social events, and please continue use of COVID appropriate behavior. Only that can save you. Otherwise, even whatever is in your hand, if you don't follow, you will find the same situation coming up again, which is potentially avoidable.
Mm.
It just requires use of mask, frequent hand wash, and then essentially we talk of safe distancing as much as possible.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I think, you know, it's up to the individuals now to be more responsible towards not only themselves, but also their family members who probably at any given day are possibly at a higher risk than the young individual himself. So the message to the Punekars is very loud and clear that be cautious, take all the precautions. Now, you mentioned about the cautious optimism that, you know, and the good news that it doesn't mutate. And what is the stage at which the vaccine development presently is? I have a few friends in the pharmaceutical industry as well, and I speak to them, and they say that the average duration for any vaccine to come out for an endemic like this is, you know, almost like 10 years. So even if we are able to crash it down to maybe 2 years, still it will be a big achievement. So what is your take on that?
There is something which we have to understand. This is a rapidly spreading organism. Now, if you don't produce whatever intervention you want to in a short period of time, then you are risking infections for majority of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So the efforts have been to shorten the duration of vaccine trials. Now, nothing comes in life minus risks if there are some benefits to be gained out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you think in terms of gaining this kind of an approach to provide vaccine, one must also understand that we will know about short-term toxicity. Since the outbreak is a very severe one, which tends to explode in terms of numbers as such, you will still get what proportion of people who would be protected if you provide a vaccine X to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is given to 100 people, then it might say that you are able to save, let's say, 60-65% from getting the infection. Just because the magnitude is high and you can quickly get to those figures. But I accept that we would not have a sufficient time to find out what are the adverse events that will occur if you take this particular vaccine. By and large, the only kind of adverse events which lead to fatality or those which are very severe ones are likely to happen in the first 6 months where the follow-ups will be done. And therefore, our understanding will be limited, but you have sufficient time to know about it. And as I told about the backdrop of this infection, you would have to have some kind of an urgency. And perhaps these vaccines will be able to get emergency use authorization as an approach to my mind. Now, in these circumstances, what is also important for one to understand is when will these trials end, even in India or elsewhere?
Mm.
As people have been hearing, perhaps December 2020 to March 2021, you will see many trials giving out the results about protection as well as the side effects that they have noticed. Now, what perhaps we will not know is duration of protection through a particular vaccine and also certain side effects which may occur over some period of time. But then one may have to take the risk because this particular infection is affecting our entire life, and for certain vulnerable populations, you will find that it could also mean risk of death also. So vaccine will come, but vaccine perhaps by March, to my mind, we will know what choice we will be able to make, which vaccine to take, because there are close to about 200 odd vaccines which are being developed. About 27 are currently in human trials. We would get to know some of those early cuts results perhaps by March. And then we may have to make choice about a vaccine to be provided to people, because we don't want a large proportion of people to be getting infected. The sole reason is one simple reason which I perhaps forgot to tell,
mm-hmm.
that even if majority of the people are likely to come out with no issues of hospitalization, with no sickness as such,
mm-hmm.
but there is one thing which we have to remember, that this virus infection is peculiar. It produces something which is called as post-COVID syndrome. Now, even if I may be asymptomatic, I could land up into post-COVID syndrome. Now, if I do that, then it could affect my quality of life. It could lead to, development of different diseases. It also increases the risk of unmasking of chronic morbidity within, which means if I was supposed to develop diabetes, you might find that with COVID-19, I might develop diabetes, though I am too young at this particular age, than what it would have happened after some time.
Okay.
So this is a very funny kind of an infection. So provision of vaccine would be a tool that we have to think about. But there is a caution. One caution is, even if you know which vaccine is efficacious and has less side effects, people should not think that once I know the result, from next day onwards, vaccine will be available and I would be safe. Because we have to remember that the global capacity to produce large proportion of these vaccines is limited.
Right.
We can produce close to about 200 crore dosages, 250 crore dosages of these vaccines. And you need to take two dosages 1 month apart, 28 days apart, for each of these vaccines, which would mean you can protect only about 125 crore people across the world.
Okay.
Now, India being a powerhouse, perhaps we will be able to get a larger supply because we tend to produce vaccines most in the world. 70% of the vaccines are ours. But at the same time, we will have to prioritize as to who to this vaccine should be given. And that would happen. So even if the vaccine comes, please don't expect that the vaccine would be available off the counter. It is when people calculate how much time would you require to provide vaccines to all, you would perhaps require 2 to 3 years' time to receive vaccine across the world to every individual. Now, these are going to be challenging issues, though I also believe very strongly in our own Indian capabilities. We will be able to deliver to our citizens far more rapidly than the rest of the world because we have much better public health infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
If we apply our mind, we can do this work very quickly because we also conduct census in one day's time for the entire population, which is a world record of its own kind, which cannot be so easily done. Which is invisible kind of an achievement that most often people may not be knowing about it. So if we take it on mind, it will happen. So essentially, no, we will have to continue following this COVID-appropriate behavior until the time you receive an effective vaccine and you come to know that you have generated what we call as surrogates of protection. No, or correlates of protection, which means some tests should be able to tell you now the vaccine has actually protected you.
Right.
Because the vaccine may not protect everybody.
Mm.
So you will have to undertake another test for the same. So we should wait, but we should follow COVID-appropriate behavior.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think you also answered my next question, which was on distribution of the vaccine. And I guess, you know, considering that our public health infrastructure is quite deep-rooted right up to the rural villages. So, you know, we often say that, you know, any place which you land in India, you'll at least have a post office or a government hospital close by. So that's very likely that, you know, the reach is present, but it's probably the limitation in terms of the doses that might be available. And, you know, the prioritization of those doses is something which, you know, the government will have to come up with a solution before it reaches the common man.
Yeah.
Great. So we have a few rapid fire questions for you. Are you braced up?
What is that?
So which would be your favorite city? You know, you've been at Delhi, Aurangabad, Mumbai, Pune, Baltimore. So which would that be?
No. See, basically, I've been living in Pune for such a long period of time. And you always feel when you stay in a particular city, that city is the best one compared to rest of them. So essentially, it would be Pune.
Perfect. Favorite travel destination?
Oh, travel. I hardly travel anywhere. Wherever I go only for work. I don't know. I never had leisure in my life.
Okay.
I really don't know.
That answers. Okay. Time with family or time in the research lab?
I think one has to balance both. You can't have one. No. You're not so lucky to be able to make a choice to do one thing only because it could be either not considered worthwhile in terms of contribution or it could be that you will miss the other side which you also have chosen in the past. So balance is more important.
Absolutely. Your inspiration within the medical field?
Within India, it used to be Professor Ramlinga Swami, who was a renowned pathologist.
Mm-hmm.
And he was our Director General of Indian Council of Medical Research, one of the tall figures in medical science in India.
Mm-hmm.
Outside, is Anthony Fauci, an immense guy. He's 78 years old. He is director of NI, we call it as NIAID. And in NIAID, he is director for last 45 years.
Oh.
And still, you know, being in US, he continues to be a lead figure for any disease research, and most important is, I think it is, he is somebody when you talk to, when you listen to, you realize the strength of this particular person. I had an opportunity to have half an hour discussion with him in 2018, I suppose. I thought I was actually one of the most lucky persons to have half an hour with him.
Oh.
Very busy man, but he is a big idol.
Excellent, excellent. Can you repeat the name again for our audiences?
Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Last one, Misal Pav or Vada Pav?
Oh, Misal Pav. That's a simpler choice.
Last, to close this interview, you know, you've of course spoken about the caution that the Punekers need to take, especially during the festive season. Any other word of advice?
So one simple thing. No, we need to think of life as not one to be celebrated today. We have to look at the future. If you can avoid festivities and the social events that are associated with it, you will retain your festive moods for future for a long period of time. Don't lose your guard. Those who are older citizens, they may insist that they would like to go and visit a temple because this is a season when they tend to go to the temples to worship. But they must also remember our Sanskriti tends to tell us that God exists everywhere. If he exists everywhere, if he is also existent within people, within your own जो मूर्तियां रहते हैं ना घर में,
yes.
उसमें भी अगर वहां रहता है तो हमको बाहर जाके उसकी वो टेम्पल में जाके उसकी पूजा करने से कुछ ज्यादा मिलता होगा, ये सोचना गलत है. प्लीज अंडरस्टैंड दैट गॉड इज देयर टू हेल्प यू इवन एज अ कंसेप्ट. इफ यू डोंट बिलीव इट, ही बिलीव इट. And also, you must remember that he is not Rakshas. If you don't go to the temple, he is not going to curse you. I think the curse could come the worst way if you don't follow COVID-appropriate behavior and avoid such events.
Absolutely. Very beautiful words and at the same time, very deep. I think that is something which the Punekers would want to follow during the festivities and even for the next 2 to 3 years, that we should not let go of our guard. And, you know, God exists within each one of us, and let us respect him there rather than, you know, going possibly to the temples in a hurry. So thank you, Dr. Raman. It was a wonderful conversation. And, you know, as we continue our battle with COVID, maybe in a few months, we would love to have you again, listen to, you know, what's happening around and also what the Punekers need to do and to follow. Thank you so much.
Thank you.